Radio News. I'm Rick Ganley. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. If asked about the role of nonprofits in New Hampshire, many people would respond positively, saying that these groups help the homeless, showcase the arts, or rescue stray animals. But while that's all well and good, the state's nonprofits recently have emphasized another, more hard-nosed role they play, economic engine. According to a report this spring, 1 in 7 Granite Staters works at a nonprofit, contributing $9 billion to our economy, and New Hampshire's nonprofit sector may be particularly active. Given our state's small government philosophy, these groups often perform tasks that elsewhere the government might pick up. But while running a nonprofit has never been easy, the report says these days it's become especially tough. Demand for services is up, while resources are low, as familiar financial models these organizations have long relied on aren't working like they used to. In addition, there's been some criticism of the nonprofit sector itself, that its leaders need better training, that many groups aren't nimble or adaptive enough, and that there are just too many nonprofits, duplicating services and spreading already thin dollars even more thinly. Today in The Exchange, what's new and what's next for New Hampshire's nonprofits? Let's hear from you. How well do you see this sector performing in our state? How could it perform better? Where might nonprofits borrow strategies from the for-profit world? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests joining us from the D.C. area, Stacey Palmer, editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, a news source for the nonprofit world. And Stacey, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us in studio, Mary Ellen Jackson, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits, an association that serves as a resource for nonprofit organizations in the state. And Mary Ellen, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Laura.
Well, before we get into some of the issues that I mentioned in the introduction, Mary Ellen, let's just get a definition out of the way. A nonprofit. I mean, everybody recognizes the local theater group or the animal shelter. But just describe for us, Mary Ellen, the full range of nonprofits and what that really means.
Well, the nonprofit, actually, we're really another big issue for the sector is the name. You know, nonprofit, what does that mean? It really doesn't begin to embrace the grasp and the depth. In New Hampshire and across the country, boy, the sector is diverse. It ranges from, you know, brain injury hospital in New Hampshire down to the local food pantry, across to animal shelters, to, you know, services for autistic children. The depth and breadth of the sector is very significant, and that's part of the challenge. One of the key challenges to the sector is to sort of recast our identity.
Well, what is the problem with that name, nonprofit?
We're defining ourselves by what we aren't, and that is, you know, historically it described the difference between our motivation is not profit, it is community building, it's people. You know, there's conversation about calling it the people sector, the community builder sector. The reality is that is our name right now, and the task at hand is to really clarify the sort of essential economic and social impact of the sector. So we're not living, the name is doesn't live up to really what we are, but I'm glad to have this conversation because...
Well, that's interesting, actually. And from a marketing perspective, you're right. Why would you want to brand yourself by saying, here's what we aren't?
Exactly.
It doesn't really do a good job of saying what you are.
So it's a somewhat of a historical mantle we carry. But, you know, we're moving forward into a new era. And I think that's the shift that's ahead of us.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that new era today. And Stacey, I want to get you into this, too. How do you think most Americans view nonprofits and what do we expect from them?
I think a lot of people think about nonprofits almost the way they think about Congress. They may often like their member of Congress, but not like charities writ large. So they often really respect the local groups that are providing services to them. But sometimes I think when you have some of those questions about wastefulness or, you know, charity scams or that kind of thing, people are also worried about that. And there's been a lot of attention lately to nonprofits that aren't doing any good. There was a big journalism project called the 50 Worst Charities that really showed the underside of the nonprofit world, which is really not the way the more than million nonprofits in America operate. Most organizations are doing lots of very, very important work, but they're so diverse that people really, I think, don't always recognize that they have something in common, that the Food Bank and Harvard University are both under that same nonprofit status.
Wow, yeah, I wouldn't lump my local food bank and Harvard University together ever. What do you think, Stacey, about what Mary Ellen Jackson says? I think it's real interesting, this definitional problem that nonprofits have.
There's always been a lot of talk about how to describe what nonprofits do, and so a lot of people like to call these organizations social sector or social good to really emphasize what it is that nonprofits provide to society. And, you know, I think one of the reasons the definition is coming under question is a lot of businesses are now thinking about ways that they can operate more like nonprofits. A number of states have passed various corporation things that allow businesses to basically say, we're not going to make a lot of profit. Our shareholders don't expect that. It's a special kind of corporate status that Delaware just passed, making it something that almost every company in America might decide to do to really emphasize its social value. So there's a lot of blurring of the lines going on.
Blurring of the lines. So businesses might start operating more like nonprofits. I have read that some people are saying nonprofits should take some ideas from the business world. So lots of cross-fertilization there, it sounds like, Stacey.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that everybody is benefiting from, this idea that each sector needs to borrow from the other, that it's not just a one-way kind of thing. So, you know, there are lots of nonprofits have been scrappy and working with limited budgets for a really long time. And as the recession started, a lot of businesses really needed to operate more like that.
Wow, that's interesting. And as we talk about new models and how nonprofits are adapting and how some in the business world may be emulating them, Mary Ellen, let's talk about the old model, first of all. And you've said that nonprofits' 250-year-old model, way of doing business, doesn't work anymore, getting worn out. What is that model, first of all, before we talk about how it might change?
Well, the model, like you said, Laura, it was crafted years and years ago, and it basically was at a time where very small, tiny groups were emerging that were dealing with social problems on the ground floor. But today's world is very complex. And so we have this model in which there are some assumptions being made that to do work that the nonprofit sector does requires you to not have talent, to hire at a very meager salary.
You take a vow of poverty if
yes,
you're going to do this work.
And that's really counterproductive, and that is really not in keeping with the times. Some of our other constructs, we for years promoted this idea that we could do work without very little overhead. Well, that also is counterproductive in this complex and challenging environment. We've also we have created funding models in which we fund, and when a nonprofit begins to develop some success, the pressure is, yes, act like a business. And that is really some good advice on so many different levels. Many nonprofits are terrific business people. But businesses invest in research and development. Business invest in innovation. Businesses invest in talent and their staffing. Businesses invest in marketing. So as we embrace more and more business strategies, we also have to take on the infrastructure strategies of all smart businesses know they pivot on a very strong business muscle of a strong infrastructure. So we've got some shifts in our thinking if we want to solve and really make a dent in some of these problems of great magnitude, great complexity. We've got to address them with infrastructure of significant complexity and significant magnitude. So we're not we need to make some shifts in our infrastructure, in our thought process around the kind of tools that are really needed.
Well, and that's interesting. And Stacey, you know, on one hand, people would say, yes, invest in good talent, invest in technology, invest in your infrastructure. And yet the public, donors, they sometimes are a little uncomfortable when they see their nonprofit as sort of gold-plated. You know what I mean? It's on the one hand, no, you don't want anybody to starve. But on the other hand, there's an expectation that things won't be as fancy at a nonprofit because, after all, the public is donating.
Yeah, that's one of the things that nonprofits are really trying to help better educate the public about, what it really takes to get results, and to put that emphasis there rather than on things like what the salaries are paid. And clearly nobody wants there to be abuses, you know, where somebody's getting a $100,000 salary and providing, you know, very little in services or that kind of thing. But there's a recognition that you really need to look at what is it that the nonprofit is accomplishing. And part of it sometimes takes really great people. It may take spending on marketing to get the message out. And so some nonprofits have really gone against that traditional, we're not going to spend anything and focus on results, and they're getting them. Share Our Strength is a great example that a lot of your listeners may know about because you certainly see them everywhere. They just decided, you know, even if their donors were upset about it, they were going to invest in doubling their staff, and they are now getting tremendous results, really making a difference in trying to end childhood hunger within the next 2 years. That's something that we probably would never have thought possible, but they're really making that kind of a difference. That's the shift in thinking that's going on in the nonprofit world. Spend a little more and focus on results.
Do you want to jump in there too, Mary Ellen?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm a huge fan of Share Our Strength, and Bill Shore just penned an article that came out in the Stanford Social Innovation Review about the whole idea of our solutions have been very simplistic and the problems have gotten more complex. And so, yes, you invest in coordination of services, you invest in innovation, you invest in talent, you're really going to begin to make progress. Now, that's not saying the nonprofit sector hasn't made progress, but it has. It moves forward and then it in very incremental ways. And we haven't really supported the idea of risk, the idea of failure, and we only fund success and we only fund project-wise. We've got to move past some of these constructs because, you know, we need to get out there and try new things, and that's going to take a little bit of risk, calculated risk, smart risk.
Well, when you try new things, people get upset because they say, hey, I donated to you and I don't like what you're doing.
Yes, but I think we can be much more effective in saying, don't donate to us. Invest in a solution. We need to bring people together on a different note.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break, and we'll hear from a couple nonprofits here in New Hampshire, how they're innovating, how they're seeing the future. We'd love to hear from you, too. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning, and join NHPR in the Music Hall in Portsmouth as we kick off a new season of Writers on a New England Stage. Our own Virginia Prescott sits down with noted authors, including Margaret Atwood, Bill Bryson, and Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Take a look at the full schedule and get your tickets at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, mostly cloudy today, chance of showers with high temperatures in the lower 70s, mostly cloudy this evening, then becoming partly cloudy, areas of fog after midnight, lows tonight in the mid-50s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Ford & Associates PA, providing representation for businesses, trustees, and institutional creditors in bankruptcy and troubled debt matters, Ford & Associates PA. And Plymouth State University, offering graduate courses in Plymouth and Concord to meet the needs of working professionals throughout the state. Plymouth.edu/graduate. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at nonprofits in the Granite State, their role, their new challenges, and how they've changed. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. What role do you see New Hampshire's nonprofits playing in the state? How could they perform even better than they already do? And where might nonprofits borrow strategies from the for-profit world to further improve their services? If you work for a nonprofit, too, we'd love to hear from you. What are some of the challenges you see for this sector in the Granite State? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Mary Ellen Jackson is in studio, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. On the phone is Stacey Palmer, editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. And joining us now is Maureen Beauregard, president and founder of Families in Transition, which provides housing and social services to individuals and families who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. And Maureen, really nice to have you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. Good morning, everybody.
And how long have you been around? I said you were the founder.
I am the founder. It's hard to believe. It's been about 22 years.
Wow, wow.
And it's been an amazing journey seeing all the changes that have happened over these 20 years.
Well, let's talk about that journey. Sure. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen, Maureen, in your sector, mm-hmm. whether it's the scope of issues that you deal with or the way you fund your operations? Let's deal with the issues, first of all, that you're trying to solve.
Well, we provide housing and services to the homeless, and you know, every year there's a, you know, at the federal level, there's a 10-year plan to end homelessness, and we keep burning through that. So it really, you know, for me, it's like, what's happening upstream that we're not working on that creates this issue where people are homeless? And it's such a big issue that it's really hard to wrap your hands around it. So, you know, when I look at what we do and how we do it, I'm at a place where, you know, we're a nonprofit, but we're a business first. If we don't take care of our business, we're not going to have the mission side of the house. When I look at who it is that we're serving, I realize that the voice of those people is missing, and we've created a Granite Leaders Program to help elevate their voice. We have a researcher on staff because, as Mary Ellen was talking about, you need to hire, I'm known for hiring really smart people. These people are way smarter than me. They're specialists in what they do, and I'm not afraid to hire really smart people. So I think that's a business model that has helped us to do the next right thing for those we serve.
We're a business first, Maureen. That's interesting.
Without
coming from the head of a major nonprofit.
Yeah. If we don't have the back of the house in order, Laura, if we don't take care of this treasure that people are giving to us, and we are so appreciative of everyone and every entity that gives to us. If we don't have the back of the house in order, we are not going to be here tomorrow to keep fulfilling our mission.
What do you mean about the back of the house?
I look at it administratively. You know, it's like, you know, we have like our finances, where we can be pretty complex in our financing because of all the means that we pull in to create affordable housing or low-income housing or shelters, and it's complicated. So we need to have the staff that can really handle that complicated funding stream,
the technical aspects of
yeah.
it, and so
and
forth.
And plus, Laura, it's like, you know, we hired a marketing and economic development person, and people are like, you have one of those on staff? And it's like, absolutely.
Let me ask you another question, because I've heard about some innovations that you folks are doing. And yeah. I'll ask my guests later about marketing, because I know that's a big issue. From what I understand, though, Maureen, you guys have done some innovations around fundraising, you know, obviously applying for grants, asking for donations, and so forth. But you run a couple stores. You also have a cleaning business.
Yes, we do.
Tell us a little bit about that. You really are running a business there.
You know, there's the business of the service that we provide, and we have to run that business. And then we do have two thrift stores, one in Manchester, one in Concord. We have Fit Cleaning Solutions, where we do commercial cleaning. And what I've done is I've looked at, okay, what are we doing that we could do for others? Well, so many people wanted to give us their stuff that it got overwhelming. And I'm like, you know what? I'm so tired of chasing what the priority is this year. What is the priority this year? Okay, we're shifting priorities. Why are we shifting priorities when what we're doing is working? So we set out, and we have a very, very wonderful board of directors. They are light on their feet. They are flexible. They are right in the driver's seat, and they're ready to look at what's real and make changes. So they decided with us, you know, we all decided, let's do these, you know, let's do this thrift store. Oh, this one's doing well. Let's do another one. We run our own property management company because we have, you know, 18 buildings and 200 units of housing. We do a really good job. We always get good reviews. Well, can we sell that service to commercial businesses? And lo and behold, we have.
As property managers.
Yeah. Well, we do commercial cleaning.
Uh-huh.
We do it for Dine. We do it for Cityside. We do it for New Hampshire Business Review. I mean, it's fabulous.
All right. Well, Maureen, thank you very much. A couple points we're going to pick up on with our guests this hour, but I appreciate you giving us your time this morning.
Thank you for talking about this very important topic.
That's Maureen Beauregard, president and founder of Families in Transition, which provides housing and social services to individuals and families homeless, or at risk of becoming homeless. The number for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts about New Hampshire's nonprofits and what may be next for this sector is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Stacey Palmer, Mary Ellen Jackson, before we go to our listeners, it was real interesting to hear from Maureen. Stacey, I'll turn to you first. We're a business first. I don't know if I've heard that from a nonprofit executive before. What do you think, Stacey?
A lot of nonprofit organizations are starting to call them that and think about themselves that way and starting to run things that really are businesses. And social service organizations can do that probably more easily than certain other kinds of groups. But arts organizations, for example, have always been selling tickets and doing various things. It's not all about donations. It's about thinking of things in different ways. And that gets back to what we were talking about with salaries and talent and those kinds of things. It takes a lot to run a nonprofit organization. It's not just a group of volunteers anymore. And sometimes the volunteers are hugely important, but there's also these business practices that are really critical to advancing the solutions that our society is really demanding.
All right. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Joan in Manchester is up first. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have comments about how large and small businesses, specifically nonprofits today, relate to people with disabilities, the world of disabilities, and accessibility to goods and services. It has been my experience, especially here in Manchester and in the state, that they're a little out of touch with, and I heard this comment earlier, the voice of the people or the people being served. And there are, I have experienced quite a few things, and I've, in different cases, reported those things, tried to get them fixed. And still to this day, I'm not sure that New Horizons Shelter actually has an accessible bathroom or accessible bed for women in wheelchairs, and they don't have to sleep in the, with the men on the you know, the cafeteria floor. And the Boys and Girls Club art room is actually wheelchair accessible, so a child in a wheelchair might be able to, you know, use it. And then there are so many other examples of nonprofits that are, say they are in connection with people with disabilities offering services. The public thinks they do that, and they don't.
Wow. Okay, Joan, thanks a lot for calling in. And what do you think, Mary Ellen Jackson, adapting to the needs of people with disabilities in the nonprofit sector?
Well, Joan reminds us of one of the core commitments of the sector, and that is to get very close to and understand the people we serve and also keep current with them. You know, the nonprofit sector does tremendous work, but part of the shift is also to step back and re-examine, are we hearing and seeing and bringing the voice of the clients, participants in our program to the forefront? So a critique of that is welcome. You know, I think that's part of the new shift is there's improvements that we have to make. You know, there's the editor of the Nonprofit Quarterly, Ruth McCambridge, she takes us to task on this. She says, periodically, stop and think, are you really meeting the needs? I think someone like Maureen Beauregard welcomes this kind of feedback.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Maureen said that she's got people on staff, on her board, who are also the people that they serve. And that's, seems to me there's been sort of a disconnect or a wall before between the people running the organization and the people the organization serves.
It really depends on the organization, but I think most of the time there is a close on-the-ground connection. It can always get better.
All right. Thanks for that call, Joan. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And here's an email from Katie in Durham who says, I'd love to hear some discussion about how New Hampshire nonprofits actually measure their success. Do they measure actual outcomes, or are they simply counting Facebook likes as a measure of success? In full disclosure, Katie says, I'm author of Measuring the Networked Nonprofit that just won the Terry McAdam National Book Prize. Our research showed that increasingly nonprofits are using for-profit style measures of success. And I always wonder how New Hampshire's charities compare. Love to hear from both of you on this. Stacey Palmer, why don't you go first on that? How do you actually measure success?
That's actually one of the hardest things for nonprofits to do, and one of the things that everybody's grappling with is, you know, it's one thing to say that you've served this many people, but what have you done to make sure that their lives are successful over the long term? And, you know, that means that we have to focus on the long term rather than some of these short kinds of things. So nonprofits are really focusing on figuring out smarter ways to measure incrementally what's happening and then look on the longer term. And one of the things that this takes is also being willing to talk about their failures. And so nonprofits are trying to get a little bit better at talking about what things haven't worked so that they can move on to those things that really do make a difference. And donors need to be supportive of that, to recognize that you need to risk a little bit and try some new things if you're ever going to get the real answers to what solves problems.
Yeah. How do you measure success, Mary Ellen?
Well, I actually think there are ways to do it. I think the nonprofit sector needs to step up and grab that demand, that request from the community. I think we have to ask the question, what matters? It's not only, there are ways. There are definitely, you know, beyond numbers, beyond the number of people that attended, we can put some data around, you know, the changes we've seen in families, the growth in the appreciation of the arts, the improvement in the environment. It will take resources. It will take space to do that. The center is actually, this fall, bringing in one of the most articulate and brilliant people, Peter York from TCC, who talks about outcome measurement. So Stacy's right on the mark. We are grappling with it. We need to step forward with it. We cannot shy away from it. But we have to lead the conversation, because when you're measuring the growth of a child in an after-school program, you have to think, okay, so what will matter? What will help this child be the adult we all wish for him or her?
It's a little trickier than, you know, we sold 18 boxes of blueberry ice cream if you're an ice cream company. It's a little easier to measure success.
True, but it's very important. And I also think there is coordinated, organized success, meaning what does this group of human services, for example, in the Manchester area, what are they doing that's moving the needle on homelessness? So there are ways, but it really will take investment. And it's a great question to be asking, but the nonprofit sector leaders have to be right there and involved in it.
Well, Katie, thanks for that question. And just quickly back to you, Stacy Palmer, on that. Do you sometimes think that nonprofit leaders resist this idea of, you know, show me the numbers? Because it is harder to measure success than if you're in a business. You know, you sold more, you did more, here are the numbers, here are the stock prices.
For a long time, nonprofits weren't really very excited about this focus on numbers, and there are some people who still are frustrated with what they call an obsession with measurement instead of really focusing on what's honestly happening out there. But I think, you know, the conversation has gotten a lot more sophisticated, and most nonprofits are really thinking, we have to figure out some way to show our donors what's working and what's not. Donors are demanding it. There really isn't very much choice. One of the things that gets tricky, though, is it is expensive to do really good research and to look at these kinds of things. And that's one of the things when donors say they don't want to pay for overhead, well, that's what overhead is. It's things like trying to measure our results and look at what's working. So donors have to be willing to pay for some of this if they expect nonprofits to be good at reporting what's honestly going on.
Interesting. All right. Let's take another call if we could. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. Frank's waiting in Conway. Hi, Frank. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
This is an interesting subject that's dear to my heart. I've spent years in my career of providing pro bono work to restructure nonprofits in a business development and brand development setting. And what's interesting is that, be it that of associations or of human relations or development programming for nonprofits, a key factor that has to be realized is that the markets have changed, the consumers have changed, the donor has changed. And so, therefore, the evolution of nonprofits has to meet that cycle. And what's happened is that consumers are now looking as donors at what actually they're going to get the greatest return out of their donation. And so it's so important now that nonprofits actually act as businesses, developing actual business plans, not only objectives for the organizations, but more so the market strategies in which to drive funding to actually engage their mission.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling in, Frank. And Stacey, picking up on some of the themes that we've talked about before, but, you know, he's right. Consumers have changed, donors have changed, and nonprofits need to change as well.
Absolutely. People don't just write a check out of the goodness of their heart anymore. They really expect lots of information. And I think that's one of the areas where nonprofits need to do a better job of using their websites, using other ways of really connecting with people to get information, to use social media well. You know, a lot of groups have invested in that, but they just don't have the staff to really think about that often enough. But they need to be more transparent so that people really can say, what is the return on this dollar that I got? And one of the things people are starting to think about is, it better if I give to this group versus that group? Will I get a better return? And that's new. We really haven't seen donors asking that question really much before in history.
Yeah, and that's probably the lament you hear, Mary Ellen Jackson. Yes, we would use these tools of fundraising, these tools of transparency, these tools of outreach, if we weren't lurching from crisis to crisis. I've got 10 homeless people, you know, I've got something new that came up, I've got a funding crisis. So it's in a perfect world, yes, but it's not a perfect world.
It's not, but however, we're living in a state that's quite remarkably positioned. New Hampshire is small. The business community is tremendously philanthropic and engaged. We can walk next door and talk to our governor. And so for New Hampshire, the reality is we could think differently. We could pool our resources and invest in coordinated services. I mean, we really have the potential here to share leadership on this on a change in the sector. I'm very excited about being in New Hampshire and working these days because I see change. We're on the cusp of some really significant good work.
Well, and picking up on what Stacey said and the caller said, social media, how do you see New Hampshire's nonprofits, Mary Ellen, using Kickstarter, using Indiegogo, you know, other tools of crowdsource funding platforms?
You know, I think people out in the radio listening world must be thinking, whoa, look at all the things that nonprofits have to be thinking about.
Yeah.
And so, again, we're landing the plane as we're building a new runway. We're grasping to try to figure out how, you know, we have these unbelievable open networks now. We have the opportunity to share the solutions. And so we're trying to catch up with the progress that's made. And it all, you know, this whole conversation leads to we need to invest in infrastructure, innovation, and shared solutions.
Well, I like that imagery. We're landing the plane while we're building the runway. Very interesting. We will talk more after a short break. Take a lot more of your calls and emails, too, so stay with us.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, debate over a possible U.S.-led attack on Syria. Then, a former Harvard president on improving higher education. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly cloudy, chance of some showers with high temperatures in the lower 70s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the Scott Lawson Companies, protecting your company's most valuable asset, your people, through workers' comp, wellness, and health and safety services. HealthierWorkers.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. You can email us your thoughts on the stories that caught your attention this week to exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us for the Roundup tomorrow morning live at 9. Today on The Exchange, we're talking about the state of nonprofits here in the Granite State. And you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Joining us now on the phone is John Tobin, Executive Director of New Hampshire Legal Assistance, which provides legal aid to low-income and elderly Granite Staters. John Tobin, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Can you just clarify, John, for us quickly, what your group does? Because from what I understand, it's different from someone's accused of a crime, they get a court-appointed lawyer. That's not where you folks are at.
No, we're what we call civil legal aid, and we deal with crisis situations involving housing and homelessness. We're trying to deal with evictions or foreclosures or get people access to basic subsistence income or health care. We also handle domestic violence cases where we're trying to protect the victim of violence and get child support and stabilize their lives. And unlike when someone is accused of a crime, where you have a constitutional right to a lawyer, as you should, because your liberty is at stake. In our cases, what I tell people is you have as much of a right to a lawyer as we can raise the money to pay for one. So we get government support, which we deeply appreciate, including from the legislature, but it's not enough, and so we have to ration our work and turn a lot of people away, and we also have to spend a lot of time raising money. I just was in a meeting this morning and left it to come to this call about raising money.
So we get government support, you said, from the state legislature, from the state budget, also from the federal government, John?
We get some federal grants to do housing work and domestic violence work, and we get wonderful support from the United Way and the Charitable Foundation and the Endowment for Health and a number of other sources. We just did a study a few months ago, and our legal aid system is meeting about 8% of the need. We're turning away a lot of people, and that means a lot of people go to court by themselves, or they lose benefits or lose custody of their kids or don't get the income they need.
Well, being tied to a state budget process, as you well know, is often uncertain, to say the least.
Yep.
Are there new models you need to be looking at, John? Okay, government funding, as you said, is never going to be enough to fulfill the need, but budgets are tight at the federal and state level. So what new models are you folks looking at to fill the gap there?
I think you need to look at new models, and one of the things that we do is we get some attorney's fees and some disability cases, and we partner with a number of programs to do things more efficiently. But we also need, part of the question about nonprofits is really in some ways a disguised question about the role of government. There are a lot of things that some nonprofits do, such as our legal work or healthcare, that are core functions. They're basic, important things to do. And I think in some ways the fact that a lot of that is done not at the level it should be is somewhat diffused or hidden by the fact that it's not the government not doing it, it's these nonprofits. And so people get confused about whose responsibility it is and get to have an expectation that our job, that we need to raise all the money to meet these needs. And I think we need to keep having a public discussion about the role of government in meeting these needs and solving these problems.
Well, it's interesting. And you know, lately we've heard a lot about government by lawsuit or budgeting by lawsuit.
Right.
For example,
right,
in the most recent budget, mental health got a boost because there's,
yep,
a lawsuit. You know, other areas got a boost because,
yep,
there's a lawsuit. Is there a case for you, you're a bunch of lawyers, to file a lawsuit and say, hey, folks, you know, you're supposed to be doing this, we're doing it, but help us out or else?
Well, there actually is a theory for that, which hasn't gotten anywhere in the country yet. A number of people have tried it. It's called civil Gideon. Gideon versus Wainwright is the decision that said if you're poor and you're facing jail, you in a criminal case, you should get a lawyer. And people around the country are searching for a legal theory to make that happen, so far without success. One of the things we do, since we can't serve everybody, is we try to be very active in taking what we learn from our individual cases and trying to affect policy. We're in the legislature and at the Public Utilities Commission, and we bring cases to try to change policies that help our clients. The cases don't affect our funding, but one of the things we try to do as a nonprofit that's, instead of just serving individuals and turning most of them away, we try to find work and do work that has a broader impact. So we help. In some of those cases, we help thousands of people who've never been to our office, and we find that's an effective way to stretch our resources and have an impact.
Just by changing a particular policy.
John,
I want to ask you one last question, if I could, and less as head of New Hampshire Legal Assistance and more just as a member of New Hampshire's broader nonprofit sector. So here's the question, John. It's often said that there are too many nonprofits, especially in small government in New Hampshire. Do you think that's the case, John? Do you think some of these groups should either close their doors, let someone else do the work, or merge with like-minded organizations?
I think there's definitely lots of room in the nonprofit sector for ending duplication, merging, consolidating. Yes, I think that's true.
All right. John Tobin, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate
it. My pleasure.
John Tobin, Executive Director of New Hampshire Legal Assistance, which, as we heard, provides legal aid to low-income and elderly Granite Staters. One more time, the exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Mary Ellen Jackson, I know this is a pet peeve of yours. The idea that there are too many nonprofits, duplication of services, stretching already thin dollars even more thinly. But a lot of people are saying that, yes, indeed, there are too many. What do you think?
Well, what I think is that the question, I welcome the question, and I think many of us in the field do, but we really need to shift the emphasis. So the question is, are there too many nonprofits? And I really want to say to the person asking the question, are there too many nonprofits to change the way children are safe in homes? What are we talking about here? Are there too many nonprofits serving in the environmental field? I think the question reflects this old paradigm that we need to move out of. It's not that we want to keep rein on how many and how, salaries and growth and scope. I think what the better question is, what is it going to take for the nonprofit sector to be effective and vibrant in building community, in doing what people in America just really hold as critical, is having a place where democracy happens, where we act on our values, where we say it's not good enough in New Hampshire to have children that are not safe. It's not good enough to have water that we cannot drink. So the question is, what kind of partnerships and structure do we need to be effective in solving today's problems and in bringing to scale some of these organizations that are doing very, very well and they're on the cusp of really having significant impact? For those who are really specific about the question, there are too many New Hampshire nonprofits, I'd just give you 1 minute of data. There are 8,000 approximately. 77% of those are under $100,000 in budget. So of that 8,000, 6,000 are the small, very, very small, volunteer-driven community places where we have our library trustees. We have our tiny choral groups. They make up the fabric of the community, but they're not engaged in asking us for funding or government resources. So 80% almost are in that category, and that's where we practice our decision as Americans to fight different issues and to begin causes. The remaining group, the remaining 2,000, if you take out the foundations that are grant makers and you separate out the very largest of our organizations, such as Dartmouth-Hitchcock Hospital or Phillips Exeter, the remaining community building organizations total less than 1,000. So those are the numbers. I think there are so many better questions, but at least are there too many gets us talking. And I think the real question is, what do we need to be doing to be effective in dealing with some of these problems? And don't forget that the nonprofit sector is integral to our economy. We employ people. We have a very strong multiplier effect.
All right. Well, lots of emails I want to share with both of you and some calls. Here's an email that just came in from Morgan, who says, I worked for a nonprofit and I want people to be aware that some nonprofits pay their administrators insanely high salaries. The nonprofit I worked for say they help many people, and in some areas they do. But where I worked was a different story. I worked in special education school run by the nonprofit, and we were underpaid, no organization, no real help for the kids. Kids had no winter jackets. We were constantly being told that there were cuts happening everywhere. At the same time, the CEO makes over $400,000 a year. Morgan says, I want people to look into the nonprofit they donate to so they know if they're paying for salaries, for administration, or for direct care workers or public relations or helping the clientele. Morgan says there are great websites that can help. I want to turn to you for that one, Stacey Palmer, and also recognize that others have asked this same question. Someone else sent an email also asking, how does one check out a nonprofit before donating? I'd like to know who the officers are, their salaries, the percentage that actually make it to the people. So two folks, Stacey, wanting to know how well their dollars are used and how they can find out more.
There are lots of terrific websites that provide this kind of information, so you can check overall, and one of them is called GuideStar that has all of the forms that nonprofits have to file with the government, and you can search those. And then there are watchdogs that monitor how much money is going to various purposes. And they all take different approaches, so you may want to look at several of them. One of the ones that is most popular is called Charity Navigator. There's also the Better Business Bureau has the Wise Giving Alliance, and there's another organization called the American Institute of Philanthropy. So it's very easy online to just check a couple of sources, but it's also should be very possible to ask the nonprofit those questions yourself. They should be able to answer it. You should be able to find that information out. If you can't get it easily, if it's not on their website, that would be one of those things that to me is a red flag.
Well, and has your publication, Stacey, the Chronicle of Philanthropy, looked at this idea about the salaries of employees, especially top employees? Where's the right balance? I mean, you and Mary Ellen both talked about attracting good talent. On the other hand, it's clearly upsetting to donors when people get very high salaries at nonprofits. Have you guys looked at, you know, where you find that balance?
Yeah, it's a very tricky question, and it's something that goes to the heart of the how many people give. They feel really uncomfortable about the salary issue. One of the things to look at is not just what the top executives are paid, but what is the rest of the staff paid? And, you know, most of those people are not paid very well and probably haven't gotten raises during much of the recessionary time. So at some of these big organizations, the salaries are high. The more troubling thing is sometimes at small organizations when a chief executive salary is very high out of proportion to what the organization does. So donors absolutely have to look at it. But one of the things you also need to look at is what skills is it important for the nonprofit to have. At the Red Cross, for example, not only are they providing disaster aid, but they're running the American blood system. So you want somebody who is managing that very carefully, and you might want to pay more for that.
Do you want to jump in real quickly on there, Mary Ellen?
I think Stacey covered it well. I do think one thing is we as a sector, I'd rather see us grapple with this problem and talk, you know, talk about business skills. Let's start talking about, you know, strategies for raising the staff salaries and as appropriate. The average CEO salary in New Hampshire for a nonprofit is approximately $62,000 a year. So we're not talking about that. You know, are there exceptions? Absolutely. Can the nonprofit sector grapple with this and look at it like a business and look at it as a goal of ours to bring those very low salaries up? Absolutely.
But not to the point where they feel inappropriate, like our email and Morgan says.
Talking more about the balance, about the if there's a huge gap between the CEO and the staff, where is the board on that question?
Let's take another call. And this is Doug waiting in Hanover. Hi, Doug. Thanks for hanging on. You're on The Exchange.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. I have an observation more than a question. And it addresses the point that was raised earlier about a value proposition that a nonprofit should establish. Wanting to know, you know, how is my money going to be used? What's the return to me? And I think often a lot of nonprofits are not investing in knowledge about why people give, not what and who. We have the demographics, but why they give it. And maybe you find different segments of the population, and then a nonprofit can make a more educated decision on what kinds of ways they can add value instead of just writing a check to them.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Stacey, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Yeah, both of you and Mary Ellen talked about investing in research costs money, but yes, as Doug says, it does have a return.
It's not just showing the results that I think he's getting at, too, but how do you raise money more effectively? And I think nonprofits are getting increasingly sophisticated about looking at the sources of money that maybe they haven't looked for before. A number of groups, for example, are starting to realize that women are a growing economic force, and they're starting to get better at asking them for money, which was a whole part of the population that had been ignored for a while. And so one of the things we're seeing is new efforts to really look at how people solicit and make sure that they do it effectively and smartly and think about things in various ways. So in some ways, it's making sure that nonprofits aren't just casting a wide net. And the caller also raised an important point about volunteers and other non-cash donations. And one of the great things that's been going on at a lot of nonprofits around the country is people are donating their marketing skills, their technology skills, not just going and saying, I want to go paint the school today and refurbish, but saying, I have professional skills that your nonprofit can use. I would like to put them to work. That's really a tremendous help to many nonprofit organizations.
Well, and we heard earlier from someone who couldn't stay on the phone who says he or she likes to give to nonprofits but does get annoyed by the calls, the emails, the letters, and so forth that come after that donation. So I'm sure that's a complaint you've heard before, Mary Ellen.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, we are getting better and more skillful. I sort of want to go back to the why people give to, though. I think the nonprofit sector sometimes misses the boat in terms of, you know, several people have said to me, the most meaningful thing I did in my life was engaging in volunteering and in giving. I think we need to tap into that. There's so little places people can find value in their lives, and we need to figure out ways to invite them in. So, you know, I'll end right there.
Well, and I will end by letting people know that the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits is having a nonprofit leadership summit on September 20th, Mary Ellen. And if anyone wants more information, they can go to our website, nhpr.org. Stacey Palmer, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stacey Palmer, editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, and Mary Ellen Jackson, good to see you.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Mary Ellen Jackson is executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. The Exchange is a production of NHPR, and today we say a sad goodbye to one of our super interns this summer, Catherine Muzzy. She heads back to start her junior year at St. Anselm College. A super-duper researcher and phone screener, we will miss your talents here, Catherine. Thank you very much, and best of luck in the year to come. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. The executive producer is Keith Shields. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant is shutting down by the end of 2014 after years of legal battles with the state. In New Hampshire, healthcare providers turn out in force in favor of Medicaid expansion. And at the State House, support solidifies for a new Senate president, Republican Chuck Morse. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Froling Energy, providing and installing high-efficiency wood pellet boilers for commercial, institutional, and residential space heating, online at frolingenergy.com. And from Ollie at Granite State College, now registering lifelong learning classes for ages 50-plus in Concord, Conway, Manchester, Seacoast. Course listing at olli.granite.edu.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Steve Roberts of George Washington University, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. A potential Western military strike on Syria has been put on hold temporarily. Yesterday, Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron postponed a vote on proposed military action. He wants to give UN weapons inspectors time to to complete their investigation into the mass chemical weapons attacks in Damascus last